Blog Talk Radio.
You know what you did wrong. They did wrong. And since he did wrong, well, I mean, he got what he was asking for. Like this, you violate and we'll demonstrate. He violated, so I had to demonstrate.
And after the fight, Mayweather demonstrated a lack of interest in the line of questioning.
And taking advantage of what
you know, you'll never give me a fair shake. You know that? So I'm going to let you talk to Victor Ortiz, all right? I'm through. They put somebody else up and give me an interview. Let me switch it up.
You know, you could put 10 Larry Merchants in the ring with Floyd Mayweather, and they all could be 21, and they all going to come up short.
Hey, folks, it's Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, Tornado, you're coming
down. And we're coming at you with another live edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. We got a big showdown coming up this weekend, Floyd Mayweather Jr. versus Miguel Cotto in boxing. We got huge UFC on Fox 3 card with main event Jim Miller versus Nate Diaz. The whole UFC on Fox 3 fight card, I just noticed today, it's like they only wanted fighters with 7 losses or less, which is pretty rare considering the amount of experience usually fighters have to have before they even get in the UFC. But actually, the main event fighter has the most losses on the card, Nate Diaz. 7 losses. He's 15-7. Jim Miller is 21-3. And Miller, I thought, was unstoppable for a little while until his last fight, and ended badly for him. But till then, he was a juggernaut. So I'm sure he's going to learn from it and come back and become a different fighter. But he's only got 3 losses. He lost to Benson Henderson in August of last year, a decision, but he was pretty beaten in that fight, badly, just barely hung on for a decision, so it was a tough fight for him. That was at UFC Live 5. And this big weekend, the UFC is trying to fight with boxing, trying to say, F you, boxing, we can match you and do well even when Floyd Mayweather's fighting.
You know, I'm not a fan of his.
I second that emotion. But what do you obviously published a big article. We've still got it on near the top of our blog right now. Your preview and analysis there of the Floyd Mayweather fight. You think he's going to take Miguel Cotto out in 8? The fans, why?
I've talked to a few other people that have opinions on the fight, and basically speed kill. No other way around it. Speed kill. We got Cotto is a very physical, strong, athletic fighter, a lot of heart, but his main liability is the fact that he is easy to hit. His punch, like when he is fighting a guy like a Margarito or Ricardo Mayorga, yes, he is going to have an advantage in speed and boxing ability. But if you go back to his fights with, look at his fight with Manny Pacquiao. I mean, he looked about a step and a half slow. Go back to his fight with Bad Judah until he broke Judah down, third round on. Judah was definitely outmaneuvering him, outboxing him, and, hitting him at will. Cotto doesn't have the greatest chin, and I remember early in his career, I think it first was exposed in the Judah fight, that his mouth tends to cut open and bleed a lot out of the mouth. I think it was like the mouth, and I was right on the chin bone he was cut, and he was bleeding pretty significantly. I remember his fight with Ricardo Torres. He was knocked down a couple times and hurt pretty badly. Torres obviously is a bigger puncher than Mayweather, but he's nowhere near as fast, nowhere near as sharp. The fight with Margarito, the first fight, I should say, you know, loaded wraps or not, Cotto was really brutalized out there. I mean, he was cut up bad. He was dripping blood out of his eyes, his nose, his mouth. The fight with Pacquiao, he was pretty cut up, pretty bad. So he's got scar tissue, and now you're talking about a very sharp puncher with a lot of speed. Cotto's only real chance, and I'll say it again, is he's got to use a heavy, hard thumping jab to the torso. He's got to jab the shoulders. He's got to jab the chest. He's got to jab the body, the forearm, whatever he can hit. Don't go as much for the head, especially early. But along the same lines, he's got to avoid the one pratfall that De La Hoya fell into. De La Hoya, for a 5- or 6-time world champion, who was on an elite level for 15 years when he fought Mayweather, was making the mistake that whenever he got Mayweather against the rope, he would almost like bury himself on top of Mayweather and throw these little short, slapping arm punches to the body that looked like a bad casting for a hockey fight. And they were causing no damage. He had no power behind him. He was so intent on just burying Mayweather against the rope. If Cotto gets him on the rope, you're right, he doesn't want to let him escape, but at the same time, he wants to be able to give himself a little bit of room so he can get full power and leverage under those body punches. I think he will get Mayweather on the ropes a few times, but he's going to make the same mistake. He's going to get in too close, and once again, Mayweather will just be able to force a clinch, get the referee to break him up. And then around the third round or so, I see Mayweather landing a couple of really sharp right hands. He's going to be landing those fast 1-2s inside of Cotto's wider punches. And he's going to get some bleeding around the mouth, around the nose. He's going to start really taking over around the mid-rounds. I see Cotto landing one big shot and maybe causing some damage probably around the 7th, 8th round, somewhere in there. Maybe hurt Mayweather a little bit, but in the end, that'll be his downfall because he's going to come in and Mayweather's going to find a home for his uppercut, hit Cotto with some shots, really gash his eye open, his left eye, which is the one that's been damaged before. And then around the 8th round, I can just see him landing right hands at will, staggering him back, across the ropes, forcing Tony Weeks, who's the referee. I think so does my one college, James, who we call Hockey of the Day. He thinks it's going to be 5 rounds and a whitewash. My dad thinks that Mayweather is going to put Cotto down, and if not down to the 10 count, to at least force the stoppage that way. Now, I see Cotto going out on his feet, but pretty much battered and pretty much defenseless around 8 rounds.
Well, this fight is a little interesting to me because Blake isn't quite so trash mouth. Against his opponent this time around. He's actually given him a lot of credit and recognition and called him a bunch of times in front of the press, a fighter who should be deemed undefeated. So it's kind of interesting this time around. And the big thing is the day. I mean, if there's ever a script for somebody to upset Floyd Mayweather and beat him, it's Cinco de Mayo. A Mexican fighter or a Puerto Rican fighter here. And then you got Canelo Alvarez, who's Mexican, on the card. And, both of those guys want to win. Wouldn't it be perfect if they could both win on the same day there? That's so important to that culture. Would be unbelievable. And Floyd haters everywhere are celebrating today because it's the National Day of Prayer, Tony. Are you aware of that today?
I am aware of that. I have a relative who's a Bible thumper and so about 84 times.
Floyd haters everywhere praying today that Miguel Cotto can pull it off.
But I doubt it myself. I mean, I believe in miracles. They can happen. But this one, I don't know. I think the odds are way against it. I like Floyd by decision. I think Cotto has enough chin to go through the whole fight. And I think the smart money's on the decision. But I think he's going to be trying to knock him out. Don't get me wrong. If it happens, you know, I think it'll be late. But, you know, it could happen. Earlier, just like you say, never wants to put in a full workload before he goes to jail. And he's going to have quite a night there against Cotto. Unless Cotto really presses the action, it's not really going to give him any urgency to put him out cold. You know, I think he's just going to want to show how great a shape he's in. And, you know, not really try too hard for the knockout because he doesn't want to get knocked out himself. And he knows Cotto can do it because otherwise he wouldn't give him so much credit. But we'll see. I mean, he's been working hard. And I read a story today by Lance Pugmire that talked about how one time Floyd had a dream that he lost a fight and he disappeared for like an hour and a half and he come back and he told his buddy he just ran 10 miles. So, you know, this is the kind of work ethic he has, but it's an interesting story, of course, and the thing about Floyd that I think people don't realize is he's smarter than he looks, and, you know, there's a lot of reasons why this isn't the Pacquiao fight right now, because he's all about money. I mean, his nickname is freaking money, and he knows half of the appeal for the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight is the anticipation. And right now, he's kind of trying to spread the word, I think, that it's not going to happen. He's kind of trying to drop hints that it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen because he wants the public to just really crave it so bad and talk about it so much that it just has to happen at ridiculous prices. And it's like oil speculation, driving up the price of gas. And he's smart enough to figure that kind of stuff out. And I think that's what he's doing. He's trying to handpick these opponents. And you look at this card. I mean, look at Shane Mosley, a previous opponent of his, fighting Alvarez, who's another undefeated fighter. And that is the backup plan. He's already got it set up. You know, he's going to see how Mosley does against Alvarez. And if he thinks he can beat him, he's going to fight Alvarez next rather than Pacquiao. That anticipation open, and now we know that Pacquiao might fight to the end of 2013, so chances are the fight will get pushed into next year. But I think he's smart enough to know that it's all about the hype. And I'm going to write a little piece tonight. Well, these are pieces of little reference points. You know, somebody has the show page tonight coming in, actually linked directly from the show description to your story, so.
There you go. Another little plug. Well, I got some really good feedback on my article. You know, a lot of people that read it, you know, they told me that it was excellent work, and then they commented that keeping, you know, the high standards of you know, fight previews that I always do. This is a fight that I actually am rooting for to be wrong. I would love to see Cotto win the fight. You know, I like Miguel a lot because he is such a quiet, persevering, humble guy. You know, he's got a lot of heart. He's got all the qualities to really like in a fighter. And, you know, he's kind of like the anti-Mayweather. And I don't mind Floyd so much as a real person. But his persona is playing the bad guy. He would be a great wrestling heel. Yes, he has. He actually has been one. But the problem is, as you know, I just have a severe dislike for members of his family.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I hadn't even realized some of the stories behind his relationship with his father. I read something recently about how his father held him when a guy was trying to gun him down. He's trying to throw one of his relatives, I guess, out of the house, and he held Floyd up in his arms while the guy was had a gun to him. And instead of shooting him in the head or the chest, the guy shot him in the leg. because he didn't want to hit the kid. So, I mean, that's the kind of shit that went on in that family. So, I mean, to some extent, their dysfunction can be forgiven when you realize what they've gone through. I mean, it's some crazy shit. If that's just, you know, one story, I can't imagine the rest. And, you know, obviously the father went to jail for a little while. But that's what kind of makes this fight scary for me. I think that Floyd could come in, you know, probably in the best shape of his life going into this fight. He knows he's going to be on the shelf for a while afterwards. He knows, you know, he really has to make a statement win here. And he's picked a guy who's really, you know, kind of at a disadvantage because of his reach, number one. He likes to throw a lot of hooks, Miguel Cotto does. He likes to kind of stalk and plod around the ring more than, you know, duck and dive and do the things like Floyd Mayweather does. So I think styles make the fight. And Floyd picked this guy for a reason, because he knows he can dance around him all night and he can be aggressive when he wants to be, because he has the reach. So I think he's prepared really hard for this one, too. I keep hearing about, you know, how many different guys have been sparring with him. And that's the aspect of this that people don't realize. Like, Floyd is going to get better and better and better because of his gym atmosphere. He's working with up-and-comers right in Vegas. Established guys want to come in and work with him. And people just want to say, I sparred with Floyd Mayweather. So he's going to get the cream of the crop coming into his gym to work with him and get him ready for fights. And, you know, I think he's going to be unstoppable for a while until he fights Pacquiao. Even that could be an even fight. We'll never know until it happens. But anyway, that's my two cents on the matter. There it is.
Before we move on and talk about anything else, I'd also like to talk a little bit about the main undercard fight between Saul Canelo Alvarez and Sugar Shane Mosley. I've come out before and said it. I think it warrants being said again. I like Shane Mosley. I always have. I followed his career ever since he was moving up the ladder to challenge for his first world championship in 1997. I followed Shane Mosley a long time. I got to see him defend his title live in Philadelphia, 1998, when he was world lightweight champion. A very impressive performance at the Temple Apollo. And I don't think he deserves this title fight. I mean, at one time, he was, you know, the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. Absolutely. Vernon Forrest seemed to have his number, knocked a little luster off him. And they were like, and the one thing I'll say about Shane Mosley, Shane is a fighter. If he has all the physical advantages, he looks like lights out, dominant. Even before that Forrest fight, anybody he fought, you know, he had no trepidation at all. Even the first fight against De La Hoya, no trepidation whatsoever. Legitimately won that fight. Then he got dropped and hurt badly in the first Forrest fight. Lost the decision. And their second fight, he was so tentative, he stood on the outside the whole time, and he was just rolling his hands. And he let Forrest control the action and win the decision. And then, you know, Mosley came back and, you know, had the fight with Fernando Vargas. Then he fought Winky Wright, and it was the same thing. He just looked so tentative in there. The second fight, he was a little bit better, but he was still so tentative in there. You know, loses the both fights. And even in the second fight with De La Hoya, I thought he lost. He looked tentative. Against Mosley, I mean, he looked horrible. And against Pacquiao, he looked worse. I don't know how a guy that's 0-2-1 in his last three fights, with the two losses basically being where he lost 23 out of 24 total rounds.
Yeah.
And the other fight being a very lackluster draw with Sergio Mora, I don't know how he has earned a title fight here except for his name. He will give Alvarez some difficult spots. A younger Shane Mosley, I think, would win the fight. An older Shane Mosley, especially if Alvarez is very aggressive and works the body, should batter Mosley. Might force him to retire on a stool around maybe 9 or 10 rounds, or win the decision. A younger Mosley, I said, yeah, would be competitive. I don't see a 40-year-old version of Shane Mosley, who was built so much on speed and reflexes, being able to keep up with a younger, bigger, stronger, albeit less experienced fighter like Alvarez.
Well, why don't you talk about how you really feel about it? I actually agree, but I think, like I said just a few minutes ago there, I think the reason why Mosley is in the slot is because it's an audition, like, you know, for Floyd. Floyd is grooming Alvarez for a future opponent. You know, he wants to see if it's worth going toe-to-toe with this guy. So he puts in a guy who's been in against himself. And Mosley's only been being paid $600,000 for this fight, you know? So that should tell you something. And he's desperate for a fight. He's a cheap buy. They throw him in there. It's a yardstick for Floyd. And at the end of the day, you know, they sell him on his name and his record and his experience against a guy who's undefeated. So now, you know, there you go. Sells more tickets.
That makes sense.
But I don't know. You know, Mosley has been up and down, too. So you never know. Maybe he pulls one out here, but I doubt it. I think Canelo Alvarez has been given this fight because of Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah,
I lose like that. I think tomorrow will be riots in the streets of Mexico. but anyway, we got a big UFC event coming up this weekend too. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, but I just wanted to mention first of all our sponsors, Milifidel.com, MiliFidel.com. We're going to have their some representatives from the company on at 8:30 here in a few minutes. We're going to have Andrew Jay and James. He kind of came up with the idea of the company and got it started and are operating it right now. And we're going to talk about their efforts, their clothing line, their charitable enterprises, the whole works. And we're also going to talk about how they're working to kind of get established with the mixed martial arts and boxing marketplace. I just actually saw online they had some pictures done with John Molina Jr., who's an up-and-coming boxer. He's going to be in the title picture there pretty shortly, I think.
John Molina Jr., isn't that the guy that had the only win over Hank Lundy? That stoppage win over Lundy about 3 years ago?
I'm not sure if that's the same guy, but it could be.
I'm pretty sure it is.
If he is, you don't like him. Beat your buddy. Hank Lundy. Yeah, we're going to get him back on the show one of these days.
Yes, we do.
But anyway, UFC on Fox 3, you want to run that down here. As I mentioned, it's Jim Miller versus Nate Diaz in the main event. I think Miller's going to win this fight. Nate Diaz has never really impressed me that much. Like I said, he has the most losses on this card, which is, you know, not really an insult or anything like that. It's just, it's kind of interesting. But he's in the main event, and he's the kind of guy that, you know, he's had some strong performances in the past, but he's hit or miss. And a guy like Jim Miller, he's just not gonna stop as far as, you know, coming in and being in a better position this time out than when he fought against Ben Henderson. He's not going to even look back to that kind of performance. He's going to be going in there and just thinking to destroy Nate Diaz, and I think it could be first round or over. I think it's kind of a mismatch, but we'll see. Maybe Nate has improved quite a bit. We don't know. The big thing about Nate is the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So if he does get anything close to a win, it'll probably be a submission, I think, if he pulls out an upset. But I think Jim Miller's going to take that one home. Co-main event is another familiar face, Josh Koscheck. He's 17-5, and he's fighting Johnny Hendricks, who's 12-1. and Hendricks is kind of an animal. He's a pretty good young up-and-coming fighter. Koscheck is established, but he's had some wars in recent years here, and he hasn't fought a whole lot. Also have another interesting bout there at the co-main event. Rusamar Paul Harris, 14-3, fighting Alan Belcher, 17-6. We got LeVar Johnson, 16-5, fighting Pat Barry, 7-4. Michael Johnson, 10-6, fighting Tony Ferguson, 13-2. In sort of a little bit of a ultimate fighter there. A championship showdown. Both those guys got through the Ultimate Fighter as, the winning finalist. So now they're going to fight each other. That's going to be really interesting. So we'll have to keep a close eye on that one. I think that could steal the show as the fight of the night. Michael Johnson's 10-6, Ferguson's 13-2. Ferguson won the show. I think Johnson might have came in second that year, but this is kind of an epic showdown between the Ultimate Fighter show. Let me just check here and make sure I'm right about Johnson. Yeah, he actually lost to Paul Sass last year, October. But yeah, he lost in the finale to Jonathan Brookins back in December of 2010. So he was in second place on the show, and Ferguson won it, won another. Oh,
hello.
We're back. Sorry about that, folks.
Yeah.
We had a little mishap. My computer likes to go wicked slow sometimes. Be a bitch.
You want slow computers? You didn't come to work where I work.
Yeah.
I think that computer is like the original Sandy when they first invented the thing.
I'll never forget the first computer I used. It was called a K-Pro 10. It was strictly a word processor, but it had a couple games. And the two games were based on Donkey Kong and Pac-Man. And it was basically, the graphics was all stuff that you could make by punching a letter or a symbol or a shift and then something on the keyboard. And in the Donkey Kong game, it was at the P, and you hit spacebar to jump over the little O's.
Oh, man.
It was pretty cool. My sister dominated the game. She learned how to get to the final level. It was crazy. It was kind of funny watching somebody play.
I remember the first computer I got. I think I might have been in 6th or 7th grade. I don't really remember. And basically, all it had on there was you had a word on there. So me and my friend, we were about like 12 at the time, we'd get together and we'd pretend like we were writing like letters of the guy that we were going to beat up, which of course was like nobody. But yeah, we're going to fight you. And
hey, we're back. Keep getting kicked off. But we're back, and we have our Mila Fidel guests ready to go here, live.
When did you get them in the sponsor?
A couple weeks ago. Hey, guys, can you hear us?
Yep.
Andrew, we got Andrew and James.
This is James.
All right. How's it going?
Very good. How are you?
Good. Well, we're live on the show here, and we gave you a little bit of an introduction earlier on the show. Tell us a little bit about the company, how it got started, and what got you the idea to do
this. All right, that's a lot. There's a lot of questions there. And Andrew will jump on in just a second, which I'd love to have Andrew jump on because he's actually the founder of the company. And so he's going to be able to let him tell the, you know, the story from conception.
Okay. Sure. Well, tell us a little bit about what you do for Millicent.
So I can tell you, I've been involved with the company for about a year now. I met them at a local event, and they were a company with a phenomenal idea, a phenomenal cause, and a great start. They have world-class artists, and they had their production, their distributors, and their product was set. I loved what they were doing. And what I did and brought to the table was we needed to increase our distribution. We needed to get out there with our social graph. We needed to start some moving some shirts. We needed to bring in some spokesmen. We needed to get some distribution. And so that's what 2012 has been all about for this company that started just a little over 2 years ago. And again, most of that first 2 years was really called R&D with their artists and the materials and the design of the shirts and such.
Cool. And you guys are trying to move into the mixed martial arts and combat sports circle a little bit these days?
I tell you what, the mixed martial arts really jumped on us. As you can imagine, many of the guys, the fighters with their military background, once they heard about Milli Fidel and the fact that Milli Fidel means military loyalty and that everything we're doing is about paying respect, paying homage to the men and women that serve or have served, they jumped on board. So really, quite frankly, it was just a natural trail for us to go down.
And there's a lot of veterans associated with the actual running of the company too, right?
Oh, it's huge. Actually, three out of the four of us are either currently serving or prior military. So the band brings a lot of integrity and authenticity to the table also.
Cool.
Yeah, that was the original idea was, you know, we wanted something that paid respect to, the men and women that serve, but that you could wear on the street, you know, and so our designs aren't necessarily in-your-face bombs blowing up and, you know, guns and knives and so on and so forth. We've taken symbols from the military and infused those into the artwork, so we've got pieces of clothing that you can wear, you know, out at night with a jacket or during the daytime when you're out shopping and you're carrying that message to pay respect and pay homage to the military without something that's so drastically in your face. So we want something that was infused with fashion versus just, you know, down and dirty symbols and in your face.
Right.
Anything, like I said, when you anything you do to pay homage to the military is always a wonderful thing. Tomorrow, I unfortunately have to attend an older relative of mine who passed away just this past weekend suddenly, and I'm going to my first ever military funeral. And just the fact that they're doing this for a gentleman that served in World War II and admirably served his country is a wonderful thing. You know, you have your veterans that served in the past that are now older members of our society. And you also have current members of the military, people that have served in the first Iraq War back in the early 90s, to the guys so admirably serving today in Afghanistan, Iraq, throughout the Middle East, and possibly soon Korea.
Well, most definitely, you know, that's the thing about the military's fired apparel is that it really transcends, you know, all generations. You know, unfortunately, we've been battling right since this country was first founded, and so there's been people involved in the military and veterans since day one, fortunately/unfortunately. So you're right, we've got people from 9 years old to 90 years old wanting to wear the apparel.
We got Andrew on the phone now. Andrew J. Is it Yersich? Is that how you pronounce
Perfect.
It?
Perfect. I got to commend you on that. You're one of the first people to actually pronounce my name right the first time.
I'm one of those folks who used to get his name pronounced wrong all the time in school. So.
I think that's what leads me to getting it right most of the time when I try.
How you guys doing tonight?
Good. We were just asking the wrong question to James. I guess we got to ask you, how'd the company get started? What got you the idea? And where did you come up with it?
Well, I guess I'll try to give you the kind of the more shorter story version, because if not, it could take about half an hour just to tell you that. Long and short of it, I worked for a nonprofit about a year before I started this, and that kind of got me involved as far as doing nonprofit work. Unfortunately, we lost our funding, so that got stopped. But about a year later, I was at dinner with my girlfriend and her best friend. And I was in a restaurant, and I'm looking over, we're sitting eating, and I saw a young Asian kid sitting there wearing a camouflage hat, and the camouflage hat actually had pink aerosol wings on it. And obviously, he may have a military background, knows about the military. Aerosol is one of the units in the military. So I thought to myself, if, young kids or, just people in general think military stuff is cool and trendy, if we could come up with a brand that could pay respect to our troops, raise awareness to what they've done and what they've been doing for the years, then, why not? Why couldn't we have something? You've got all these other brands out there that basically stand for nothing, just about looking cool. Well, I thought, why can't we do a brand that pays respect to me and, everybody else, my father, my uncles, my aunt, anybody in my family, which about 90%, 80% of us, including my two other buddies, it's time to have a brand that pays respect to what we've been doing.
All right, and you guys are one of the only ones I know of who have a shirt honoring the killing of Osama bin Laden. How did that sell the other day, the anniversary?
We definitely saw a spike in it. It wasn't probably what we wanted to see in it, but if we sell one more shirt to me, it's worth it, because that's one more person that's knowing what we're trying to do and getting the overall spectrum of what Millie Fidel's about.
Right. What do you love most about doing what you do every day with the company?
Just the fact that one day, when this does get to, where we all know it can get to, and the lives that hopefully we'll be able to change by what we've been able to do. Everybody wants to start something to make money. That isn't why I started this. I started this because I want to touch people's lives. I wanted to create something that brought awareness to, my brothers in arms.
Cool. And tell us a little bit about the veteran aspect of the company management.
You have myself, which was U.S. Army, and I was Air Defense Artillery. You have, we kind of go by code names because I can't release the other two names. One guy goes by SNOT, which means sniper on target. He was actually a Ranger sniper. And then our other partner was a 82nd Airborne Scout, and he goes by Ginger.
All right. My dad was there.
I used to have my father on the call with us tonight. My father is a former member of the military. He was in the Army, served in Korea during the Vietnam War. And his passion, he wasn't a sniper, but does a lot of shooting and still goes to the range all the time. His passion is watching sniper videos. And he just went out. He was on. He's pretty much retired now from his job as an electrician. But last year, during the storms, he came out of retirement, and he was gone for a couple weeks each time and made a good chunk of money. And the first thing he bought himself was a 338 Lapua long-range sniper rifle with the adjacent scope. And he took it out one time so far, and he's just trying to get it calibrated in. And He's like a kid in a candy store. For his birthday, which was yesterday, we got him a DVD pack of sniper videos. He'd love helping you guys right now, but we'd probably run over our allotted time of 2 hours.
Well, that's great. You should probably have him get, one of our newest supporters and a good friend of ours now is Jim Gillian, and he has the world record sniper shot for over in Iraq and Afghanistan area, and for the 7.62 rifle. You should just have him go get his videos.
Will do. My dad's birthday, is for me a 365-day event, so I'll be happy to buy my alarm, and I think he'll love it. And if you can, I just found out about, you guys being a sponsor of ours just earlier this week, and what I'd like to do is, take more time to check out your website, and I'd like to maybe get him something from there, too, so I think he'd really appreciate it.
That's great. It's a good thing to be, you know, like James said earlier, our spectrum of our audience, you know, and who wears our stuff. It can be from, you know, a 9-year-old boy that, you know, that we're trying to, you know, anyway, up to, you know, a 65, 70-year-old man. Anybody that has kind of, you know, an attachment or even, you know, prior service guy, you know, is going to want to wear something that, you know, respects what he did and what his, you know, buddies did and, you know, all over history.
Yeah, it really transcends the interest at any age, any ethnicity, you know, different socioeconomic backgrounds. You know, I tell people you can walk into Walmart or you can walk into Bloomingdale's and Nordstrom, and there's someone wearing something that's military-inspired. I mean, we've been wearing hats and boots and such forever, but why not wear a brand? What Andrew, you know, Andrew's idea from back to the beginning was, why not wear a brand that actually means something, that actually, you know, has a cause, actually pays tribute? And so that's where we, you know, get excited every single day, is we're doing something that everybody wants to do and wear, but we put a cause behind it and gave it something to really make it stick.
Cool. And,
exactly. And James, you hit on the head. That's just the biggest thing is, you know, put something out there that it's got a meaning and a purpose behind it instead of just wearing something that looks cool. Why not wear something that looks cool and has a purpose? You know, and every day we, you know, we forget.
Tell us a little bit more about the Fisher House that you guys support and what the money actually goes toward that you guys generate.
Well, the Fisher House is basically, I guess, the easiest way to explain it is like a Ronald McDonald House for veterans and their families. So if a soldier was hurt, his parents or his wife needed to be close to him while he was at the hospital, they stay in these houses. And these houses, I mean, the one here in L.A. that we help out, the Wilshire District, sleeps 60 people, and it's like a 4-star hotel. But the other side about it, you know, it's not that cold, dreary feeling of being in a hotel. You're around other people that are going through the same thing you're going through. And they've got libraries and gazebos and all that good stuff. So, you know, it's a nice place to relax with other people going through the same, you know, the same scenario you're going through, and you're close, you know, you're close to your soldier, your family member at the same time.
And having such a close connection to the military, what can you tell us about the state of the war veterans coming back from overseas right now?
I think it's horrible.
What it's like.
I think, you know, that's, you know, the sacrifices that they're making and when they're getting treated, you know, when they come back is, I think it's un-American. You know, I think, you know, they're sacrificing, they're giving up their lives for people, you know, somebody told me a couple weeks ago, they're over there risking their lives for people they don't even know.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the ultimate sacrifice, whether they're there, you know, 6 months, a year, or they don't ever make it back. I mean, they're over there giving up their lives, their livelihood, their day-to-day stuff that they do back at home for people they don't even know. So for them to come back and not get the 100% treatment that they should get, that shouldn't cost them a dime or any of that stuff, I mean, I could go on all day for it, but, you know, I'll stick just to that. Yeah, that should be one of our first priorities.
Great. Well, you know, it's important and gracious of people like you out there to do something about it and try to help any way you can. So we appreciate that. You know, I'm near and dear to the military because I went to military schools, and I also, you know people who died in combat. So
yeah, I lost an uncle in Vietnam. I never got to meet him. He was 19 years old when he died. He was there less than 2 months.
Hey, everybody knows somebody. Everybody has a family member that's either you know, in the military right now, or as a veteran. Most of us have had a friend that's been, if not killed, they've been injured. So again, one of the interesting things about the military and the people we're meeting is, again, that I love is that it just, again, I use the word, you know, transcends. You know, it doesn't care what color you are, doesn't care what, you know, socioeconomic background you come from, what your ethnicity is. The military has someone from every walk of life, and again, someone from every walk of life has been affected by a family member, again, that has either gone and served and come back injured or lost their life. So every single day, and there's just nowhere that we can go, or not a store that we can be in, that is not going to have somebody walk through that door that can relate to it. It's a niche that, again, like no other niche, is broader than just almost anything you can imagine. It's amazing. Every single day. And there's just nowhere that we can go.
Talk a little bit about the folks that you guys are dealing with. Obviously, you know, some big superstars and some people that aren't that well known but have been reported on, like this one boy USO guy there. Tell us a little bit about
that. That's a great kid.
It's a great kid. I'll let Andrew hit on that. And I'll just say again, it's amazing. Almost every day, you know, we're getting find out about a 9-year-old child that's involved, or you know, huge stars in Hollywood that are following us on Twitter, the Fortune 500 companies. I'll let Andrew hit, you know, a couple of the names. But again, that's a piece that just, again, never ceases to amaze me every single day. It's a different walks of life that are affected, indebted to, and support the men and women that serve. So Andrew can, you know, drop some names to you and some of the people that we've got to meet and have fun with, for sure.
Yeah, I hate to, you know, drop names or, you know, act like we're bigger than we are, but we've been fortunate to work with some people, you know, that have really taken an interest in what we're doing and have really helped our cause, you know, and kind of see what the brand can be one day and what will it be. I mean, the first person that first got involved with, you know, that helped us out was Kim Delaney, and I'm sure everybody knows who she is, but she's also one of the main stars of the TV show on Lifetime called Army Wives. And we luckily got connected with her because she's on the board at the Fisher House here in West L.A. So that was one of the first ones we had the honor to, you know, of working with. You know, over the last 2 years, we've worked with, you know, various UFC guys too as well. So we've been lucky at that part. But our probably two cool, biggest, newest ones are, which you mentioned earlier, our little 9-year-old boy named Cody. And he's the one that, you know, he's been all over the news and everything. He's a 9-year-old little boy that goes to the airport and meets all the soldiers when they're coming or when they're leaving and hands them a piece of candy and tells them, "Thank you for protecting me." And for a 9-year-old kid to do that, to be selfish enough to, you know, to respect these soldiers that he doesn't know, once again, and just the fact that walk up to him and tell him, thank you for protecting me. And, you know, he was one of the ones we're lucky to be working with now, which we hope to be doing a lot more with, you know, eventually later to help him grow his cause as well as along with ours, is we were able to introduce him to his idol last week, and that was Jim Gillian. He wants to be a sniper when he grows up, and there was an appreciation day at Fort Stewart last week in Georgia, and Cody lives in Georgia, so we put them two together. So they had a blast. I mean, I know Cody talked about it he's still talking about it, and Jim had a blast meeting him as well. So, you know, that was one of the connections we were able to make, and we're lucky to get connections like that every day. And the other biggest, you know, the real other big one, I guess you could call it, and is the real big guy himself, and that's, we've been able to work with, we're starting to work with Bill Goldberg.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he doesn't need any introduction. Everybody knows who he is. So, you know, we've been real fortunate with him because he's a huge military supporter, and he really believes in the product and what we're trying to do with it.
That's perfect timing with him because as people call wrestling now, Brock Lesnar just came back. He's coming back into the WWE. And it's like the old classic there.
We just think it's a great fit. You know, he likes what we're doing. We, you know, we love having him involved. He's great with the military. He's a huge military supporter. He didn't serve, but his family did. So, you know, he's kind of like us. So he has a direct connection to it, just like most people do. But like he said, and that's why I said earlier, he was actually the one that told me a couple weeks ago, he goes, anything I can do to make the guys over there feel better about what they're doing, you know, because once again, it came from his words, these guys are over there giving their lives and giving up, you know, sacrificing for people they don't even know. So that didn't come from me, that came from him. So, and that being said, you can kind of paint the picture of who the guy, you know, who Bill Goldberg really is. And if, you know, if you see him, you know, what you think he is, the real guy he is, that is definitely true, the most genuine person, that what you see is what you get.
And what do you guys like most as fans of the combat sports out there? Do you follow mixed martial arts and boxing, or just one or the other?
I follow a little bit of all of it. I know James has a background in boxing. You know, I've been watching boxing since I was a kid. I'm probably more of an MMA fan because I watch that probably more. But, you know, from the boxing world, we're really fortunate recently to work with John Molina Jr. Obviously, if anybody knows, follows boxing, he's ranked about, I think he's top four in the world for his weight class. So, you know, we were real fortunate because of my sister that has a connection with him, we were lucky to connect with him, and we did a photo shoot with him a couple weeks ago, and photo shoot came out great. So that, you know, from the boxing world, that was when we were able to work with, and we were honored, and, you know, he likes what we're doing, and he said he's another one, whatever he can do to help support the military, you know, within his power, he'll do.
It was funny, we were just talking about John Molina Jr. a short while ago. Rick was, you know, talking about him, and I
mention him because he had that fight on ESPN a couple years ago, almost 2 years ago. We had a win over Philadelphia by the name of Hank Lundy. Behind to stop him. And Lundy is actually a guy that trains at a bio boxing gym in South Philly. And I was watching that fight. I actually was at a baseball game that night, and I DVR'd the fight. I watched it like 2 in the morning when I came home. And I'm watching the fight, and Hank is winning. I'm like, Hank, you're not Floyd Mayweather. Knock off trying to do the things that Floyd does. And that's when John caught him in the 8th round with that big left hook and knocked him down and stopped him a couple rounds later.
Yep. Yeah, I can't wait to see him back in the ring again. I know he's got something coming up. You know, we're excited to see him back in there. We really appreciate and honor to be able to work with him as well.
Yeah, we definitely seen in the last few months our network grow. One of the gentlemen that we're working with just had a phone call with Evander Holyfield camp. Don't have the results of that yet. And we reached out and actually had a couple other major fighters contact us, and so it'll be hard to see where those leads go. You know, we did some work with Shark Fight, and so on the mixed martial arts side. So it's just been interesting to see how our web and our network is changing. Where those leads will go for sure, you know, nobody knows, but it is reaching more and more people every single day.
And tell us a little bit about the actual clothing that you sell. I know you got the women's line, the baby line, and the men's line, so there's a lot to talk about. Tell us about some of your specialty.
Well, I mean, the cool thing about us is we don't take any T-shirt, you know, anything off the rack. All our shirts are custom dyed. They're all custom, they're all custom designs. They're all, you know, original pieces of art. There's nothing that we take from something else and throw it on the shirt. Everything's done, you know, is original artwork. Every shirt's custom dyed. It's enzyme washed. We try to give the customer the finest quality T-shirt they can get for their money.
Most definitely. I think it's huge. And I'm just going to reiterate, actually almost repeat what Andrew said. I mean, think about that. Every one of our shirts comes to us white, okay? So they're all, like I said, that's huge. I mean, I don't even know if anybody else is doing that. They're all, you know, every single shirt's dyed the color. And like I said, we're washed and distressed. Everyone who's throwing our shirts on is going to say a couple things. It's the best feel and it's the best fit. And so it's not nothing against the Hanes BPT, I guess, or, you know, the basic shirts that people are wearing. It's just not what we do. It's definitely a fashion piece that, again, you could throw on and wear it out at night. And so, like you say, we're definitely combining the message, with the fashion. So all of our pieces are going to be something that, you know, you give it as a gift or you get it for yourself. You're going to be adding it to your wardrobe. Is this going to be like your go-to shirt? It's not going to be your oil-changing shirt. So, you know, we're doing, you know, the other pieces, of course, the hats, hoodies, and such. And where you're going to see us going is from head to toe, you know, shoes, boots, with a military look to it, all the way up to your hats, everything in between, including, you know, your belts, watches. We're going to be, when you're thinking about, you know, how people think Wrangler for cowboy jeans or, I guess, Nike for tennis shoes, people are going to go Millie Fidel, and not only are they going to go, oh, holy cow, man, those guys have the coolest military-inspired clothes, but they're going to be, hey, aren't they the ones who helped the Fisher House? Aren't they the ones who actually have a cause that they're fighting for? That's where the clothes are going ultimately.
I mean, yeah, like our biggest thing would be like, you know, what were they able to do? And then you think, isn't that the one that raised, you know, like some huge amount for the Fisher House and this big donation last year? That's the kind of press that we want to hear about. That's, you know, when we get to that point, then that's when we know we're doing what we set out to do in the beginning.
It's kind of funny. One of the biggest manufacturer areas for boxing and MMA equipment turns out to be Pakistan, where they killed Osama bin Laden.
Yeah,
I get emails every day from that area. People trying to make me buy their boxing gear.
Yep.
You guys, your stuff is made in the USA, right?
Yes.
That's nice. Reason.
And the other thing that makes our stick a little different, too, is, you know, almost all of our T-shirts, you'll see that little red woven label on there. And when you see that, that lets you know it's our stuff.
Right.
And if you see in our actual shirts, we have, like, on the woven label on the sleeve, has a little red M, and then we have another woven label at the bottom, you know, at the bottom of the shirt that says Millie Fidel. So when you see those, you know, that's a Millie Fidel shirt.
Right.
Right.
So remember I mentioned the first year and a half, almost 2 years, definitely the first year and a half, was almost all finding the right artist, not just a quality artist, but the artist who could really take, you know, the integrity of what Millie Padel stands for and, you know, bring it to life in their design. And so, you know, after 2 years of finding the right distributor or supplier for the shirts and the right dye and just that right combination and such. So we definitely have a product that when you wonder, man, that shirt's cool. Man, that shirt fits right. It feels great. Well, it's got almost 2 years of, you know, development in it.
Yeah, we didn't just take any T-shirt, any design, just throw it out there and put our name on it. That was, like, one of the things from day one I did not want to do. I didn't want to look like every other brand out there and do the same thing everybody else is doing, along with the message, obviously.
And tell us a little bit about what you've got in the works for the future.
Oh, that's a great question. Now I'll jump in, and then Andrew jump in and you know, interrupt me all you want. Like I said, you know, number one, like from an apparel standpoint, you know, we want to dress people from head to toe. I mean, just think about it. I know actually a guy right now, he's walking by in camouflage shorts. The other person's got on a pair of distressed army-looking style boots. People should be wearing military-inspired clothing, you know, from head to toe. So we're working at that and adding pieces slowly but surely. The women's line, La Femme, talk about respecting women, ladies' empowerment. That's going to take Pink and that's going to take Juicy. Blow them out of the stores. People are going to be wearing La Femme. People are going to be wearing a lining with some meaning, something. I don't even know what Pink and I don't even know what that means. Anyway, they're going to be wearing a line that actually means something and stands for something. So that's on the apparel side. Maybe Andrew wants to jump in. Otherwise, I'll keep ranting, you know, in regards to some of the people and the connections that we're trying to make, you know, in our network and that we're trying to work with. I'll tell you one thing we're going to do is just through our network bring and attach additional services that we can lead the soldiers to. So on a cause side, you know, we're working with the Picture House, but we definitely want to make sure that if a soldier comes to us and needs something else, whether it's education or a job or whatever, do we know where to send them? Do we have other resources? That's a huge, super powerful network that we've begun that we definitely plan on continuing to stretch out.
Right. Yeah, I mean, eventually, you know, going back to the whole nonprofit things, we'd like to have it so we have our own nonprofit, and we know if there was a soldier's kid, you know, unfortunately, one of the, you know, kid lost his mom or dad in, you know, in one of the, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, he wants to go to school, and he's proven that, he, you know, he deserves to go to school, then we'd like to be able to fund that for them one day. We'd like to have a Millie Padel scholarship fund. I mean, I think James hit the nail on the head, you know, doing stuff like that and doing other needs, because soldiers have more, you know, various needs when they come back. You know, getting them back into society and, you know, getting them acclimated back in, it could be, is a huge, you know, adjustment. And if we could in the future help with that as well, then that's another thing we'd like to be able to do. We want to take it from a clothing brand that has, you know, a mission and a statement behind it to being a lot more. The clothing brand is just like one of the first, is like the first thing of what Millie Padel can be and what will be one day.
Yeah, I can definitely relate. You know, the service before self aspect was really drilled into us at the Air Force Academy. Went to my first year of college out there, and boy, I got woken up pretty quick to what life was really like.
Yeah, no,
well, that's one thing you've always, you know, when you're taught, when you first come in, you're taught to protect your brother. You're taught to be there for them. They're supposed to be there for you. That's why when you go in the military, when you're in, you know, basic training, the person next to you is your battle buddy. And what does that mean? That means you take care of him, you die for him, he does the same for you. And that's what we want to do for all soldiers eventually. We want to be, you know, military wants to be their battle buddy. If they need something, you know, if it's in our power, we can get it done for them. That's what we want to do eventually. Right now it's just clothing and helping with that. But eventually, like I said, we want to grow into all different types of, you know, things that we can do to help the fellow, our soldiers.
Right, and the thing that a lot of people probably don't realize is if it wasn't for the military academies, the colleges like Air Force Academy, Annapolis, and West Point, you probably wouldn't have the kind of boxing program that we have, even though it could be better. But the collegiate boxing program out there is really was really anchored on those three teams, and
Yeah, that and a lot of. I mean, you hit a pretty good head that too. You know, with sports. I mean, there's a lot of sports figures that came back that went to military academies before they played professional. You know, baseball or football or basketball.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, that's a great point. That's a huge group that we're reaching out to, because we definitely are not interested in just grabbing anyone to to be our spokesman. In fact, the other gentleman who called our camp was Oscar De La Hoya, and he's talking about some of the stuff Mayweather was doing. And, you know, so we, you know, definitely go, you know, is that a fit for us? But, as you mentioned, we're starting to dig in and finding out some of these athletes and celebrities with these military backgrounds. Holy cow, there's a whole host of those guys to choose from that have the experience, they're authentic, they have integrity, and they can do an awesome job, you know, representing representing our company. So we're really looking forward to, you know, adding spokespeople, you know, to our camp. That again, yeah, bring style and class, but first and foremost, they got to bring, you know, integrity to the brand.
Right. Well, Floyd actually does have a soft spot for the military. He did a Skype session, a couple of Skype sessions, I think, with the troops that got some publicity in recent months.
Yeah, you know, actually, quite frankly, I saw him on TV, just got a little thing on ESPN, and, you know, he sounded great on it. And so, you know, who knows what the future will bring.
It's a good marketplace to be in right now.
We just think it's about time.
Right. And what about this this combat issued gear that you're coming out with? Can you tell us a little bit about that, or is that
Still kind of under wraps right now? We're trying to define more things that we're going to do with that. We'll just tell you this: it's going to be the most way you can respect the soldier in everyday clothing that's probably ever been out in the market.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be a definite groundbreaking product, and you know, just give us another not even 30 days, and we'll be able to, you know, talk more about it for sure.
Super sensitive material. If you told me, you'd have to kill me, right?
Yeah, the only ones that know all the inner workings of it are you know, the inner, I guess, are the ones in the ranks, and obviously Mr. Bill Goldberg. So
we'll hold off on that. Now, give us your perspective as fight fans. What do you think is going to happen this weekend with the Mayweather fights? Perspective on the UFC fight there too. Let us know that.
Well, James, you're more of the boxing expert. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a huge Cotto fan, and you know, you can't deny Mayweather's skills and his record. I mean, though, what, Cotto's dropped two fights, so it's not like he's a slouch. So I told someone, if Cotto can put punches and get inside, and, you know, and most importantly, if he could be patient. I think these guys get so frustrated by Mayweather trying to hit him, and they're chasing him and chasing him, that they end up putting themselves in a bad spot, you know, and get popped. So, you know, I guess I must say I always do hope for the underdog. And like I said, I like Cotto because he doesn't have a big mouth, but he's got a big heart and a big punch. And so, you know, would I love to see him slip, and be patient and, you know, put Mayweather on his rear? Yeah, most definitely. But at the end of the day, it's hard to deny, you know, Mayweather's record and skill.
I wrote a preview and prediction for this weekend's fight. I really like to get in depth, and I analyze the guy's strengths, his weaknesses, his style, and I always put in the keys to victory, what the fighter needs to do to win. And with Mayweather, basically without saying these exact words, he's basically got to be Mayweather. He's got to be in the center of the ring. He's got to be, you know, using his speed, and he's got to use straight punches down the middle. Now, Cotto is a little bit more complicated because of the fact that he was going up against a guy that's supremely gifted like Floyd Mayweather. And
true.
I had written a game plan to victory for Oscar De La Hoya about 4 or 5 years ago when he fought Floyd Mayweather. And basically that game plan to victory was use a hard, solid jab to the torso, to the chest, to the abdomen, and most importantly, the shoulders. When I box, because I'm a very short, stocky fighter, I was 5'8", I fought between 165 and heavyweight, so I gave up height in almost every fight I had. And what I used to like to do was use a very hard jab to my opponent's lead shoulder, like right at that point of the shoulder. It would take them off their game, and it would also it would hurt them. It would slow them down. It would almost give them a dead arm.
Cotto's yeah, no, you're right. That's a great point. I mean, I tell people all the time, if Oscar De La Hoya at his age can stay with him, that means somebody can definitely stay with him. But like you said, you take what he gives you. If it's a shoulder, if it's a chest, whatever. And like you said, you hit that guy's jab shoulder enough times hard, hit something hard.
Yeah.
Hit something hard and just be patient. Keep moving.
If you look back at the De La Hoya Mayweather fight, the two tactical mistakes De La Hoya made was early in the fight, when he got Mayweather on his ropes, he almost bear hugged him to try to keep him there. And the punches he was throwing to the body were little slapping arm punches. Yeah, he was throwing 6 or 7 of them, but it would have been doing no damage. What I know he wanted to keep him on the ropes, I can appreciate that, but you got to cut the ring off, not smother him. He smothered
the
ring
off. Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that, because I saw that exactly. If I got too close, and then you can't punch. You're exactly right.
And the other tactic that he made was he stopped using his jab after the 8th round. If you look at Floyd's eyes, when he went back to the corner after the 8th round, the fight was 4-4 in rounds, you look at his eyes, he was hurt and he was confused because the guy was backing him up for the first time and causing him physical pain. And then De La Hoya stopped. Cotto's got to use that jab, and he's got to be physical, he's got to be strong, he's got to put methodical, relentless pressure, but not reckless pressure. But at the end of the day, I can see Floyd being too fast to do straight right down in the middle and splitting Cotto's guard. I see Cotto landing a big I see Cotto starting to lose control of the fight. Mayweather starting to become a little bit pedal to the metal around maybe the 5th or 6th round. And around the 7th, I can see Cotto landing like almost like a desperation punch and hurting Mayweather a little bit. And then seeing him keep trying to press the action. And Mayweather, instead of going with a straight right hand, start varying it up and using some uppercuts. Because Cotto's going to be leaning in a lot. I can see him slicing him over the left eye, and then eventually battering him pretty bad around the 8th round to cause a stoppage. I would love to be wrong on this prediction. I so desperately would love Cotto to win this fight. I've been a fan of his for a lot of years, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, well, I think he hit kind of nails on the head.
Last time Mayweather fought, there's no way we're going to have anything like that. So, cleanly, I guess you could say. One way or the other, I think. But anyway, guys, give us a little perspective. What's the ultimate goal with the business?
I'd be more than happy to chime in on that. You know what? I think of the phrase, changing lives and making miracles happen. I see Millie Fidel on everybody in every country because it's not U.S. military loyalty, it's military loyalty. And I think when you do that, then it gives you the tools to change a lot of lives. So put a lot of clothes on people that they want to wear and then put that money back into the system and change some lives, pay respect, pay homage to the men and women that have served by providing services for them.
All right. And how do people find you online?
They can find us at milifidel.com. It's www.milifidel.com. They can find us on Twitter at milifidel, and they can find us on Facebook at the official Milifidel fan page.
All right. And we're going to be posting your information and stories. Like some press release stuff for you guys over the next year.
Great.
Sponsor.
We appreciate that.
And it's interesting to get a little bit more background on the business story. It's definitely something that's near and dear to our hearts here. We're glad.
We appreciate the opportunity. We appreciate your time. Obviously, we appreciate your support.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Well, you guys have a good night. And definitely keep people aware of what you guys are up to.
And I'd like to personally thank both of you for your continued support of the military. And anything that Fighting Unlimited can ever do for you guys, please let us know. I thank you on behalf of my father, my grandfather, and your rest in peace, and some of my other family members, uncles, and cousins that have served this country.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. But also don't forget our other two business partners, too, that we couldn't do without them as well. And they're actually both overseas right now.
All right. Well, we pray for them on National Day of Prayer. I don't know if you guys were aware of that. Today's, according to my calendar, National Day of Prayer today. So, if you're a religious person out there, pray for the troops. That they all come back without any serious injuries. And, we always keep in our hearts and minds.
Every day.
For sure. Appreciate mentioning it.
So, guys, great having you on, and we'll keep people updated over the next coming weeks and months about what you guys are cooking up over there at millifidel.com.
All right. See
Thanks
you
again, guys. We appreciate it. You guys have a good night.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
So there you go. There's Andrew Yersich and James Rice of millifidel.com. Definitely check it out. Buy some stuff. We're going to definitely contribute as much as we can to those guys. And, it's one of those good sponsors to have. It's pretty much every business that I try to operate or, get involved in. You got to have some kind of a cause behind it to get me really amped up to do the work. So this is one of those cases. And, they really do a lot with the proceeds. So. Definitely a company supporting. And like I said earlier, it's made in the USA, not Pakistan. So go out and buy some Millifidel gear and show some support for the troops out there. Anyway, we do have some mixed martial arts to clean up here. We didn't finish the UFC on Fox 3 card. Got a little booted off there for a second on the mainframe. You know, tonight, actually, we've probably experienced the least amount of technical difficulties we've had in a while.
Don't wood now. We still got some time left in the show.
Knock on wood. All right. but I think I left off with Michael Johnson versus Tony Ferguson. Michael Johnson actually came in second place on The Ultimate Fighter. He lost in the finale against Jonathan Brookins. But he's fighting Tony Ferguson, who won one of the last seasons of The Ultimate Fighter there. He's 13-2. Michael is 10-6. That's going to be an excellent fight. And speaking of Ultimate Fighter participants, we have John Dodson, 12-5, fighting Timothy Elliott, 8-2. Dodson just came off the last Ultimate Fighter and looked pretty good. Guy I included on my list of athletes, best MMA athletes over under 25, I think. Yeah. Bleacher Report, I did an article they asked me to do on that and put Hathaway on there. Kind of regretted it later because a lot of people gave me shit for it, but maybe he'll prove me wrong this Saturday. He's fighting an undefeated guy, Pascal Kraus, 10-0. Hathaway is 15-1. And another Ultimate Fighter is on the show, Louis Godineau, 5-2, fighting John Lineker, 19-5. Not sure if he was on the Ultimate Fighter, his name kind of sounds familiar, like he was. Anyway, we got John Cholish also on this card, fighting Danny Castillo. Cholish is 8-1, Castillo is 13-4. Pablo Garza, 11-2, fighting Dennis Bermudez, 7-3. Roland DeLorme, 7-1, fighting Nick Dennis, 11-2. Carlos Avemola, 8-2, fighting Mike Massenzio, 13-6. And that's about it there. Strikeforce has an event coming up on May 19th, the heavyweight Grand Prix finale, Barnett versus Cormier. We'll talk talk about that in the next couple of weeks here. But that's about it for the UFC card, the big UFC card this weekend. And like I said, they're going to try to compete with the Mayweather fight, even though it's going to be one of those fake competing things. The Mayweather fight's going to be on pretty late, you know, as far as that particular fight. You know, the undercard's going to be going on while UFC is going on, but the UFC card will be over by the time Mayweather fights, I think. So that's their justification for it, that they can get away with it. That's tricks some people sell. Try to steal some of boxing's fan base away from it. But we'll see. We'll see who reigns supreme. But anyway, speaking of boxing, we've got to get to what other boxing events we have this weekend. And, I hate to do it, but we got to start off with the mismatch of the week. And it comes to you from a foreign country. Again, surprise, surprise. No, there's no Chibas involved. This is in Thailand. It's a guy named Saad Okiat Jim. He is the WBC Asian Boxing Council super bantamweight title holder.
Yeah.
He is 56-2-1 with 24 knockouts. And guess who he's fighting?
Ali Chiba?
A guy who's he doesn't even have five wins. He has 2-4-2, this guy he's fighting. A guy named Cyril Babanio. And he's probably not going to win this fight. He's 2-4-2. Not very well matched in this fight. That's the main event, fighting Saad Okiat Jim. So he's probably got Fabanio probably has about 1,000,000-1 odds to win. If there's even a line on that fight. Fight on GoFightLive.tv this weekend from Pennsylvania, actually Friday, tomorrow night. We got Tony Ferrante fighting Dafir Smith down there in Chester.
That'd be a good fight. Obviously, I know both fighters. Tony Ferrante, I've actually scouted him a few times. I scouted him when he was fighting Simon Carr, and then I also scouted him when he was fighting Chuck Nazario. He lost his last fight to Omar Shuka by decision. Chuck actually worked his corner in that fight. Dafir Smith is a guy that's a lot better than his record. Dafir is around 500 fighter, but he's a lot tougher than that. He's had some good wins in his career, and I think his biggest win was a win over Jeff Lacy, if I'm not mistaken, by unanimous decision. Obviously, Jeff is well past his prime, but still, that's something to sneeze at. He pretty much kicked the shit out of him.
Oh, really? Well, Ferrante is 12-3, 7 knockouts. Smith is 25-22 with 7 draws and 4 knockout wins. Another interesting fight on the card. It kind of sort of looks like another mismatch. Not quite, but a little bit. Victor Vasquez, 14-6-1, 7 knockouts, fighting Paul Fernandez, who's 5-4.
I've seen both of these fighters, so obviously I know a lot of the local Philadelphia guys. Victor Vasquez, small little guy. He's got a big heart. He's got as big a heart as his tattoos. He is covered his almost entire torso. Vasquez, he's a very action-packed fighter, but he has defensive liabilities. Paul Fernandez, also a tough fighter, will bring it. So I see this fight being a very entertaining fight because you have two guys that are not willing to really back up. And, I think they're just going to tear into each other. I would have liked to have gone to tomorrow night's card. Unfortunately, as I said earlier, I had a death in the family this past week. So we're going to the funeral tomorrow. And then relatives are all getting together for the rest of the day. So I'm going to be pretty much tied up with that. But on the positive side, I don't have to be at work tomorrow.
Yes, stick together with the fans. Life is rough. Then you die. Definitely understand what that's like. I had my first major death in the family when I was 7. No, actually, before I was 7, like a month before, when I lost my mom back then in 1984, a long time ago. But, yeah, anybody going through that, it's a rough time. But, Fox has a cart on Friday as well here, worth mentioning. We had 3 big fights from Las Vegas, the Hard Rock Hotel Casino, the Joint. I've actually been over to that place when I was in Vegas for a couple things at BB Martz, and then I went to an actual event out there, a mixed martial arts event. It was in the Joint area, but this is another area of the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. But it's a nice place. It's kind of off the beaten path. It's not really a strip casino, but Golden Boy Promotions is putting on a big card on Fox tomorrow night. Daniel Ponce de Leon, 42-4 with 35 knockouts at 2 featherweight, fighting Eduardo Lascano, who's 54-2 with 11 knockouts. And also co-main event, light middleweight, Ishae Smith, 32-5 with 10 knockouts, fighting Yi Bruce, 21-6 with 13 knockouts. And if that's not enough, they have a female fight. 8-rounder Jessica Rokocsi, 31-3 as a female, fighting Brittany Cruz, 8-5-1. Pretty impressive there. So it's funny, I think Fox has a big female following. For some reason, they do put on a lot of female fights. They used to actually I think have a special, but I haven't seen it in a while. So I think they stopped that, but they do like to put female fights on TV, so more power to them. Of course, we got the big Mayweather card. It's interesting to see so many other fights, you know, still trying to go on Friday here and Saturday. But over in Germany, there's one worth mentioning here. Saturday, Marco Huck, cruiserweight, fighting a 12-rounder, 34-2, 25 knockouts. He's fighting Ola Aforabi, 19-2-3 with 9 knockouts, and for the WBO cruiserweight title. And don't let the heavyweights be left out. We got Alexander Dimitrenko, 33-1, 21 knockouts, fighting Kubrat, who's 15-0 with 7 knockouts. And that is for the vacant EBU heavyweight title and the IBF International heavyweight title. No U.S. guys fighting for that. Also another great fighter, super middleweight, Robert Stieglitz, 41-2 with 23 knockouts, fighting Nader Hamdan, who's 43-9 with 1 draw, 18 knockouts. That's for the WBO super middleweight title. And the card goes on and on. We got 8-rounders, a couple of nice 8-round fights here. Somebody who's got to go in a light heavyweight fight, Robert Loge, 8-0 with 7 knockouts, fighting Ferenc Hafner, 12-0 with 9 knockouts. Then we got the one heavyweight here, Edmund Gerber, 19-0 with 13 knockouts, fighting Maurice Harris, 25-15-2 with 11 knockouts. And the light heavyweights, 8-rounders, Dustin Dirks, 23-0 with 17 knockouts, fighting Thomas Ulrich, who's 32-6 with 22 knockouts. And if you want to watch that on TV, you can seek out Germany ARD or Hungary DigiSport. You have a really good satellite cable setup, I guess. You can watch that card, but that's pretty stacked there for a German card. A lot of the best European guys out there. Here's a big one over in Singapore on May 5th. Featherweights Chris John, 46-0-2, and Shoji Kimura, 29-4-2, for the WBA Super World Featherweight title. Also on that card, featherweights Daoud Sino Jordan, 28-2 with 22 knockouts, fighting Lorenzo Villanueva, who's 22-0 with 21 knockouts. That's for the vacant IBO featherweight title. So
couple of featherweight titles on the line in Singapore. Nothing feels earth-shattering on that card. So a lot going on. And, of course, not to be left out, the UK is putting on a big event on May 5th. But there's, I think, about 13 hours ahead of us on the East Coast here, at least. So I don't think that's going to affect the Mayweather card. But we got Paul McCloskey fighting DeMarcus Corley in the prize fighter event there, kickoff. Also on that card, we got Martin Lindsay fighting Mickey Cavaney, Eamon O'Kane fighting Anthony Fitzgerald, Darren Cruz versus J.J. McDonough, Simon O'Donnell versus Michael Ray, Sharon Healy versus Ryan Green. And that tournament, they keep rolling on with that. They even had a pretty interesting story this week I put on the blog about, they call it marketing with balls. They had this guy put on these boxing shorts for the weigh-in that has a easy scan code on it, on the crotch area. So they call it marketing with balls. And I guess it's the new thing over there for their betting company, their betting software set up online over there. So kind of a crazy way to market something, but that's their latest thing for associating with the prize fighter tournaments. They had this guy, Eamon O'Kane, wear specially outfitted shorts for the weigh-in. But obviously also Saturday, May 5th at the Mohegan Sun Casino, halfway across the world, or the United States from the Mayweather fight. We also have a ESPN2 card, special edition Friday night fights on Saturday at the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut. We got Demetrius Andrade fighting Cisneros. Main event.
The one season of a contender. Might still step up for Andrade, who's been slowly progressing his career. Well, a little slowly for some who think he really needs to step up his level of competition. Cisneros would be a nice little step up for him. I still see if Andrade is the real deal. I mean, I think he'll be able to, stop Cisneros and rather impressively. He's a good young prospect and has a very bright future.
All right. That's really the anchor of that card. There's another couple fights on there, but nothing spectacular. It's probably going to be a little bit earlier in the day than the Mayweather card, I would think, in the time difference and all. But Mayweather card, we talked about the two main fights, of course, Saul Alvarez versus Shane, being the co-main event for the WBC light middleweight title. Mayweather and Cotto is for the WBA Super World Light Middleweight title. Obviously, we're going to have some more fights worth mentioning on this card. It's stacked in its own right. We got a light welterweight fight. It's pretty interesting. Jesse Vargas, who I saw at the last open workout over there at Floyd's gym before the Ortiz fight. He looks great. He's tall and lanky. He's got the reach. Knows how to fight. He's going to be in there against a real veteran, though, on Saturday. Steve Forbes, 35-10 with 11 knockouts. Vargas is 18.
Another contender alum.
What?
So he's another alum of the contender.
Right, exactly. Yeah. He's one of the finalists. And light middleweights, 10-rounder, Deandra Lattimore, 23-3 with 17 knockouts, fighting Carlos, not the baseball player, Quintana, 28-3 with 22 knockouts. Carlos Quintana used to play for the Red Sox, I think. Not this guy. I don't know if he's any relation.
That's not a name, you know.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it. So next Wednesday, there's a fight in Lowell. They've been touting for the connection to Mickey Ward there and Dickey Eklund, who's still training fighters. There's a super middleweight fight in Lowell for the first time in a long time. Title fight for the vacant United States Boxing Organization super middleweight title. Although I don't know why BoxRec is spelling organization with an S. instead of a Z. Anyway, Joey McCready fighting Benjamin Diaz there in the main event. Super middleweight fight, 13-5 with 6 knockouts and 2 draws is McCready. Diaz is 11-6 with 2 draws, 8 knockouts. And the real draw here is going to be Vivian Harris fighting a welterweight fight. He's 29-7-2 with 19 knockouts. He's going to be facing Jermaine White, who's 17-4 with 9 knockouts, and it's for the vacant United States Boxing Organization welterweight title. And Sean Eklund, following the family footsteps there, he's 10-4 with 2 knockouts. At light welterweight, he's going to be fighting James Ventry, who's 7-13 with 1 draw, 4 knockouts. And that does it for the... that card there. Till next Thursday, that's it. That's your boxing schedule. But other than that, I'm sure there's some local shows out there worth going to that we didn't mention. We usually just do all the title fights in the area. And of course, May 19th, even though there is a big Strikeforce Grand Prix heavyweight tournament that night on Showtime, there's a better event at Foxwoods in Connecticut, and we'll probably be doing something on the show to commemorate that within the next week or two here, because it's coming up fast. And that's the Battle of the Bags 4. 4 of them now. I think if the New York Fire Department there, FDNY boxing team, is up 2-1, if I remember correctly. I've only been to one of the events, but that was the second one. And then last year they had another one. I think last year they won. The New England guys won for the first time. First two, FDNY won. And we usually have Bobby McGuire show. He's the coach of the New York team, and just a great all-around guy. Interesting story. Definitely works hard to promote the team. But we'll have somebody on to talk about that next week, I'm sure. If you want to go check out BleacherReport.com, I just put a big story on there about performance-enhancing drugs in MMA. I think that's a pretty big story these days that's not getting a lot of coverage. We love to talk on this show about different sports, right? So it's kind of worth mentioning that mixed martial arts isn't quite being held up to the kind of standard that these other sports are being held to with when it comes to steroids and performance-enhancing drugs. And, you know, it's kind of a sport-wide, no matter what sport, you know, you're going to have issues with people trying to cheat or get an edge that they shouldn't be getting. So I decided it's time to write a big article about it and point out how many guys in the UFC and Strikeforce have been busted among the total worldwide, you know, statistics that are out there. And it turns out it's like less than 15% of the one list that I checked out are guys that never had a UFC or Strikeforce fight that got bagged for steroids. So, you know, it's kind of a thing that made me realize it's time for the UFC and Zuffa in general, I guess, because they run Strikeforce and the UFC now, to get together and figure something out, because obviously the athletic commissions are not going to be suited to change the perspective and the landscape that exists right now, because you have this controversial treatment, testosterone replacement therapy. Now, you and I know, Tony, if you watch TV enough, you're going to see a commercial for some kind of testosterone, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's obviously side effects for a lot of this stuff. And, you know, they're going to these doctors and they know what to say. It's kind of like, you know, in some circles, it's a little bit like the states that have marijuana cards. You know, it's not going to be like that hard to go into a doctor's office and convince somebody that you need marijuana. You have some problem, right? So you're getting to that territory in the MMA circles where these fighters are treating TRT like that. They can go into a doctor and kind of complain of the symptoms of whatever disease or dysfunctionality that requires testosterone for treatment and just say they have it. Not saying a lot of guys are doing that. I don't know of anybody that's really, you know, screwing the system that bad, but definitely happening. I mean, it's like a given. There's got to be people out there doing that. And, you know, they have this setup where guys can go in and they can get an exemption from the athletic commission. And that's when they usually have to have a serious problem. And Chael Sonnen is probably the biggest case as far as testosterone. Because not only has he got a big mouth and a big ego, but he had four times the level, the legal level of testosterone going into his fight with Anderson Silva. And he fought with that level. They actually had him fight, and then they tested him afterwards and found that he had that level. So it kind of shows that it can slip through the cracks, that case. It can happen. So I felt like doing an article about it. I did an article. And it just turned out of the blue. My article, I think, was published on the morning of May 2nd. Later on in the afternoon of May 2nd, there's an article that comes out. Dana White has promised to address the PED and testosterone issue in the UFC. So it's just like, wow, that's kind of funny. Timing-wise, I guess I was thinking along the same lines there. But obviously, I mean, the reason why I came up with that idea was because of the big cancellation of the Alistair Overeem fight with Junior Dos Santos. And that kind of brings me to another story, because they have to shuffle that UFC 146 card around. Roy Nelson, one of our favorite fighters here at Fight News Unlimited, because he says it like it is. Roy Nelson's going to have to fight another guy. He was going to fight Cain Velasquez first. Cain Velasquez had to pull out, change fights. Now he's supposed to fight Gabriel Gonzaga. Gabriel Gonzaga got injured. Now he's going to fight Dave Herman. And that'll be an interesting fight, because Dave Herman's pretty skinny and Roy's pretty big. So they have different styles, different looks. It's going to be an interesting fight. That fight just got made. But going back to the performance-enhancing drugs situation, it's just one of those things where there has to be an easier solution than just leaving it up to the athletic commissions. If you want to be Dana White and go out there and say, we are going to be more popular than the NFL someday, then you have to have a system that compares with the NFL for drug testing. Because otherwise, you're going to end up like the NFL with all these lawsuits, these athletes. I mean, we had a tragic situation today, yesterday, with the breaking news of Junior Seau shooting himself. And that's not a coincidence with football players. It's a trend, unfortunately, because a lot of these guys end up with these head injuries and this head damage, especially defensive guys like linebackers, like he was for the Patriots for a little bit of time, and was he with the Chargers for most of his years?
Chargers. With somebody else, I can't really remember who. The Dolphins, maybe? I don't remember.
Probably. And he's one of the top guys, you know. So he was always in on every play, most of the games, and obviously had some kind of issue with some kind of cranial damage or brain damage, or that would probably cause suicidal behavior. If I was to investigate the case, that would be my first assumption going in. I would say he had to have something going on in his brain. Obviously, he hasn't been checked out yet, but famous, you see it coming, something like that, and that's how it's like the classic diagnosis. That's how it usually happens with these guys. And if
you can remember the Philadelphia Eagles from back in the late 80s, early 90s, you got by the name of Andre Water. And he was always, you know, accused of a teammate being a dirty player, because he'd come in and he would, you know, he'd leave with his head and everything, and he had tension and was knocking a few guys out. Andre Woodley, about maybe 5 years ago, maybe a little longer than that, committed suicide, similar to Junior Seau, gunshot to the head. It was revealed after they tested his brain that he had the brain of an 85-year-old man.
Yeah, and the Chris Benoit story was just in the news again, because I guess Hustler won their appeal there with his wife. They published some photos, I think, of his wife naked early in her modeling career. And that was another case where his brain was just
a mess when they found out he killed his whole family there. So, you know, obviously concussions and head damage and stuff that you're going to see in MMA, regardless of whether, you know, a fighter's on steroids or not that you're fighting, you know, it just adds to the urgency of making sure that these fighters go in against each other clean. And I think you're going to have situations like with these players in the NFL, former players suing the NFL over their lack of treatment and, you know, the lack of foresight about brain injury there. You know, there's like three or four different lawsuits, I think, still going, at least, against the NFL right now. And we don't have that with the UFC yet. It's still too young. Nobody really has taken a big leap to go and fight the UFC, because usually it ends up in Nevada. Nevada is juiced against anybody that's suing the Fertittas or anything that they own. But that's another story. But the deal is, you know, that's a liability. If you are turning a blind eye or not doing enough to make sure that your fighters are not going into the cage on something that's going to help them injure somebody, potentially, because of that disadvantage that the guy's going in with, then, you know, you're going to have lawsuits. It's going to happen. It's something that they have to fix. I mean, they think it's going to cost money. That's the excuse that they throw out there. Well, it's going to cost money with canceling events if you don't step up and get these guys set up so that they don't get caught in this position more and more. Because, you know, there's going to be situations where these guys try to beat the system time and again, and they're going to fail. And every time some big event comes up like this Overeem thing, it's going to make you guys look bad. It's going to cost you money. So might as well pay some money up front and deal with the testing. Get that done and move on. And there's been plenty of good ideas put out there. That's one good thing about the MMA media, is that they've been tracking the story for a couple of weeks here, and they've put out a lot of good ideas and suggested a lot of good organizations that could step in and do something to make sure the UFC could implement this kind of program. I mean, these guys put out health care for all their fighters before Obama could get it set up for the country, right? So, no excuse, Dana. Make it happen. That's my soapbox message of the week. But if you want to check out the article, it's on BleacherReport.com. I'm going to write another one about the Mayweather fight tonight. Not the Mayweather is fighting tonight. I mean, I'm going to write the article tonight. Don't go looking on pay-per-view Saturday. I don't really have anything else to cover. I do have an interesting story I'm sure you'd like to hear about or talk about. But, I think that'll be the last thing for the night. Luis Resto, who you may recognize the name, has been officially denied a license as a boxing second by the New York State Athletic Commission. And the determining factors in their decision included his 1986 conviction for assault in the second degree for boxing Billy Collins Jr., some of the padding removed from his gloves.
Absolutely. I watched the HBO documentary on that, the Panama Lewis, and, you know, Luis Resto, Billy Collins, his father. When I watched that, and I was done watching it, the feelings I felt, a combination, I felt dirty, for one, after watching. I felt dirty because Panama Lewis was a piece of shit. I didn't feel as dirty because of Luis Resto. I mean, I don't know if he knew. I mean, you know, when Panama Lewis was talking to him, you could tell that, you know, he was so naive, even as an older man. Not older man, but, you know, a guy living in like a little one-bedroom apartment in a basement, you know, with practically nothing. And his life was ruined. I felt bad for him. I felt dirty just watching how much of a sniveling, sneaky, weaselly, slimy, scummy, because I could think of some more adjectives, I will. Reptilian human being that Panama Lewis is.
But then I also felt dirty watching the Collins family, because I just came away with the feeling that they were more concerned about monetary gain than anything. That was just my feeling. I understand why Luis Resto will obviously never get licensed again, even though, I mean, he's got to be in his 50s now. And I can't blame them. I honestly can't. I feel bad that the guy's life was ruined because of the actions of his trainer. But then again, as a boxer, as somebody that's worked out and competed, I think you would be able to tell. And this is an excuse that I use, not an excuse, but a reason I use against Antonio Margarito, that when you tape your hands, you have a certain feel to them. If something's not feeling right, you know. When you put your gloves on, you know the way they're supposed to feel. If the padding's been tampered with, you would know. I mean, I've worn gloves long enough to know when things have been tampered with,
I don't think
not feeling right.
That he didn't know. I mean, I think I remember him admitting to it. Did he admit he did know? He just didn't want to say anything or didn't want to protest too much because Panama just said it would be okay. And I haven't looked at the case in a long time, but I'm pretty sure he didn't he's not going to take it to his death saying that he didn't know.
I just remember watching a documentary when he was going back to see Panama for the first time. He's like, I got to know, man. Like, what did you do? I got to know, what did you do? And Panama's like, I didn't do nothing, man. And yeah, he could barely understand him so bad that they had to use subtitles for someone speaking English.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I think in recent years, I think there was at least some inclination that he did know something was up, you know, but he just hasn't been very clear about it. I actually swear I saw him in person, Luis Resto, at the MMA event a couple of years ago in Massachusetts. He was kind of acting funny. You know, he's got that distinctive look to him. You know, he's got a guy that has a recognizable face once you've seen him on TV. And he was ducking in and out of one of the trainer's rooms for the MMA fighters, where they go, you know, get wrapped up and stuff. And he did kind of seem like he was afraid of people recognizing him. So that's what made me really suspect it must be him. And I had just seen the documentary like a couple weeks before, and I was like, wait a second, that's the guy. But I didn't get a chance to talk to him and try to confirm it. It's another question you want to ask somebody that's be wrong about. That's one of those crazy stories. So I'm surprised there hasn't been like a major action, a major Hollywood movie about that case. There ought to be. But anyway, that's all I got for tonight. We're running out of time anyway, so any last words or final thoughts there, Tornado?
I don't. Just looking forward to the fight this weekend. Hope it delivers. Hope it's a great fight. I'd love to see you on the Del Cotto pull off the upset. I thank our guests for being on tonight. I think what they're doing is a great thing. And, I'll talk to you next week. I'll still release the baby, and we'll be back, as good as ever next week.
Sounds good. Don't forget to check out millifidel.com, millifidel.com. And we'll see you next week. We'll have another great show with some good guests, and we'll keep everybody updated on the fight game until then.
Beyond that.
To infinity and beyond. And unlimited fight news. All right. Good night, folks.
You are.